Welcome to Polycast, a Civilization podcast focused on game strategy.
Canis Albinus,
Makalua,
the main team,
Mega Bears fan.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Polycast, episode 391. For the first time without our audio cues live, so we have to do some editing. Blah! I'm Canis Albinus, and I've got Makalua with us.
Now that I've adjusted my microphone, I'm louder and clearer, and also, thanks, YouTube.
Yeah, and the me and team.
Bringing the times to fun times.
And the ish.
And occasionally ish.
I don't know.
Even though I've always been a good ally without exception in our games.
In the absence of an audio cue to play here, let's move on to our first topic, which is Civilization 6 New Frontiers Pass released on iOS, and we've got a review for it. This is from Touch Arcade, which I assume is a Apple thing that does lots of games and such. But they said that it's really cool. And it's nice that it's on sale, but it needs work. Specifically, they said it wants some responsiveness problems. It has the game freezes, and the responsiveness is less as good as it was during the regular. So basically, the game is just not as fast as it was when there was less content. And also, there's no console or controller support, which people were a little mad about.
Yeah, depending on what device you're using, if you're trying to hit some of the icons, if you were having to do it by touch, I could see that being a real pain in the butt.
Yeah. But plus, the slowdown is at least somewhat of an issue on any platform. It's certainly less so if you have a good machine, but it is very possible to give inputs at a rate faster than the game can handle still.
Yeah, it sounds like with everything added that it's maybe getting a little too big or too much memory usage for even medium to higher end devices if there's that many people complaining about the slowness. You can't always say everybody has a slow device.
Well, it's all relative. But yes.
While cross-platform syncing and account linking are both more reliable now, reliability during downloading DLC, restoring purchases, visuals seeing no major improvement barring some UI tweak, still the same performance and no controller support are disappointing. That's a direct quote. See if I can find the guy who wrote this article so I can give credit.
Has anyone tried here using a controller for a game like Civ? I admit I've never given that a go. It's hard for me to picture the game being able to be played quickly and efficiently on a controller. But I'm sure it's possible.
I've used the Switch version, but it's been a while. I don't remember it being difficult to control specifically.
I feel like it'd be slower, but I mean, I guess if you have like a Wiimote or something and you're pointing as if you're pointing a mouse, it's less so.
Well, the Switch things are... Oh shoot, what are they called? Joy-Cons? They don't have directional pointing, I don't think. At least I've never seen them used that way.
Yeah, okay.
You use it as a regular controller that is just separated in the middle, so you have a two-piece controller in your hands. It's a little bit weird to get used to.
Interesting. Yeah, I haven't had a Nintendo console in ages.
I only have one because that's where Pokemon is.
Yeah. Yeah, GameCube was my last Nintendo console.
I never had a Wii or a Wii U, but
yeah,
I had the 3DS.
Yeah, I've become PC Master Race over time.
I have a collection of 3DSs. DS's, so.
Well, at least they didn't get this kind of disappointment and then have to wait for it to drop bit by bit over a year. They got it all at once.
Yeah, and there seems to have been a pretty big discount right at the beginning.
Just like when I think we had, was it 20 or something off when New Frontiers Pass first popped up?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I vaguely remember it was discounted at first, and that people who came along later and decided to get it complained about, oh, for this much, I only get this much. It's like, well, you could have picked it up earlier, I guess. I don't know. I know not everybody's like, some people's finances are tight and it's probably not possible, but you know.
Yeah. It was 50% off when it came out on iOS.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty steep discount.
Yeah, it was $19.99 for the whole thing. And when we first got it, it was $40. So, not bad. Speaking of not bad.
You mean trying to have actual co-op? What? No, it's a... We've been over here before. PC Games N. But they're having a... They have a, apparently have a series of what-if articles. So what if strategy games like Civ 6 had proper co-op? Because their thought process started because there's a RimWorld multiplayer mod that's making it a little easier for people to, you know, like, run a colony together. If it's... At the top, just picture it. A married couple squabbling over children's claims in Crusader Kings 3, or players controlling different states or regions within a single empire in Civ, or splitting players into agricultural, construction, and military duties in Age of Empires. That last one we've had before, because I've played co-op like that, I think, back in Age of Empires 2.
Well, to be fair, the Paradox games do allow you to play the same nation with multiple players. So, that is a thing you can do.
I wonder if they haven't had a chance to play those versions of it, but the idea here, what if you could have this in Civ? You know, like you could, I mean, outside the game, we have this kind of co-op niche where there's diplomacy games and different sets of people decide what you're going to try and put, like, where are you going to put farms here next? Somebody else is dictating where the science research is going, but we don't have the way to do, it's not facilitated within the game.
Yeah. RimWorld's also mentioned in this article, and RimWorld has a mod that allows co-op multiplayer along the lines of what they're saying. And at least last I tried it, it seemed to work pretty well, all things considered. So okay. Apparently somebody's been thinking down these avenues. Yeah, for Civ 6, I mean, you have co-op in the sense of you can play on teams against AI opposition or whatever, so there's that. Playing on one nation, less so. But because of the nature of managing an empire in Civ, it's not clear to me how it would be different if you're, like, screen-sharing co-op versus, like, just...
Yeah, see, I somewhat like the idea of it, but then I'm sitting there trying to figure this out. How's that actually going to work in-game? Is one person totally in control of cities and the other person controls the armies? Because, like, when you have, like, in the Age of Empires, it's three people being able to do all facets of it. It's just that you're verbally over your voice chat or something splitting up. Okay, I'm going to go over here and tend all the farms. You guys, somebody else does scouting. You know, so you can split your attention among the things that need to be have attention.
Yeah.
The Civ is turn-based, is the difference. I mean, because RimWorld and Age of Empires are real-time. And Civ is turn-based.
As is Paradox stuff, technically. I mean, you could pause whenever, but the game advances simultaneously for everything on the map.
Yeah, real-time in the sense that the AI is playing along with its stuff at the same time you're doing your stuff. Whereas in Civ, it's effectively paused for you while you're playing. I don't know that you'd get the same value out of that type of co-op, unless you were trying to play that diplomacy game style.
Or if you're playing in a simultaneous turns game.
But even then, like, you would just be economizing inputs a little bit. Because otherwise, anything you could do, if it's leveraged in the game, you could also do just having somebody look at your screen and tell you, or, like, talk it over, and then make a decision together, and then execute those actions. Like, there aren't that many inputs, typically, where you're strained in the same way you would be with real-time in Civ.
Maybe they should add support in the game for things like simultaneous victories and being able to actually win the game with your friends as opposed to just zero sum, one beats all.
Yeah, and I mean, beyond the teams that they have, they could re-implement like the permanent alliance system from Civ 4, or like allow people to decide to win together at the end or whatever, have a way to just end the game and see the results. That, you know, that kind of stuff when everyone's done playing. That would certainly be welcome.
Yeah, that's the kind of co-op stuff we're missing out of Civ. It's still simple enough that you don't need to have multiple people doing all the tasks that make up an empire, the way, say, like CK3 is. Like, somebody needs to watch this part of it, somebody can be doing a war on this side, maybe a war on the other side, and somebody's got to make sure that the court's not going falling to pieces.
Well, with those, like, if you're fast enough, you can certainly manage it on your own, but it's one of those things that would be nice to have, especially for people who want the co-op experience. But there's, like, you're actively doing things simultaneously in those to a degree where I'm not... you wouldn't be doing it as much in Civ 6. You could. Like, you could have one person managing cities and one person managing units, and that would be faster than playing a turn for one person would be. But I don't think the difference is as great.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what advantage or something would you get out of it? Because part of the fun of Civ is you doing the empire building and the army thing. Whereas when you get to the more higher complexity levels, like you would have in CK3, or with the more, I want to call it more demanding on your time, the way Age of Empires is. You know, it's harder to...
Well, maybe, I don't know about demanding on time, but it's time sensitive in that you have to give orders quickly in order to succeed. Whereas in Civ 6, that's just not true. Unless you're like running a timer and you fall asleep at the wheel or something, because man, the timer in Civ 6 is slow.
Yeah,
unless you set it to fast, then it's fast.
Unless you just set it to a fixed amount that has no scaling across the game, and eventually it gets onerous because the game can't keep up with your inputs anymore, so you get screwed. That's another alternative, I guess. Plus, like, it's hard to do that in a non-competitive setting because not everybody is going to be capable of playing at the same rate.
Yeah, you go in further into the article, and they are also talking about things like the internal tensions you can get between players. You know, like if they were giving the RimWorld example of, I drafted some guy's farmer into my army and he came back with a crippled leg. You know, he had heck to pay for that. You know, but what, you know, like, what if though, if you were playing the CK3 version and you contributed more to the empire, if that gave you more power over the inputs or something, it's like, that's not co-op anymore. That's competitive. You asked for co-op here. That's getting into the ish territory. Seriously. Like other games are in the 4X category. Like, he's given us an example of Old World because it has a houses system. So you could hit, which each city is governed by one of three houses. So, you know, you could have each person play as one of the houses, I guess.
That would add like a sort of cooperative mix. Because I imagine they'd want to fight each other, but also stay together so they could not die.
Yeah. We don't want to tear the empire into two factions and basically go back to playing our own separate civs type of a thing. But at the same time, but I wanted to take that thing, which in real life, that is actually how empires, you had a place for power. And they did point out here that the thing I'm thinking of from Age of Empires 2 is actually kind of a sneaky workaround that you could actually have multiple people in the same team. It's like it wasn't supported necessarily, but you could do it. I thought it was just part of the game, as far as I knew.
Yeah, I could certainly picture in games like Crusader Kings, or especially RimWorld, if one person is substantially more experienced than the other, that there could be some interesting conversations had over how units are controlled or what choices are made.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, the human leather industry.
Well, actually, on high difficulties, most of us don't do that because they're so punitive on your, what is it called, the mood. Like, the mental breaks are probably one of the biggest sources of challenge in RimWorld, and if you're playing on the highest difficulty, they keep changing it. I think it's losing its fun now, but that's a permanent -8 relative to the default difficulty.
Well, except now they have the ideology pack, and you can actually make a religion that makes it mandatory.
Yeah, oh yeah, and then you probably don't take a penalty for doing it any longer either. My point is that, like, historically in RimWorld, there's such a cost on that, that when you're playing in the highest difficulty settings, it's just straight up not worth doing it because of that cost. Unless you have, like, only people who are psychopaths or only people who are cannibals, like, you just can't do it.
Which is what some people do for a colony, but, you know.
Yeah, you can set that. takes away a lot of the challenge, though, so I'm not a fan, but you can.
Learn to work with different people.
But then I'm one of those people who are like, well, dirt can't get dirty, so I guess we're just going to use dirt floor.
It's not as bad as moon minus whatever. I didn't need it a table.
It's minus three. Yeah, it's just significant, but there's certainly worse things. I think like raw cannibalism is more than minus 20. It's if your pawn doesn't like it, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, but it's always that last little minus three that is the straw that breaks the camel's back, you know?
Yeah, I guess. It's whatever the game feels like telling you, really.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you just roll RNG whenever you're below a certain threshold on the mental break meter. There's lots of nice tricks with that, too, like how you schedule your pawn sleep and force them to do things to give them recreation and whatnot. All kinds of optimizations where co-oping with a relative beginner could be interesting. I'll put it that way. This is at that point, you wouldn't be playing strictly to win anymore. You'd just be screwing around, I think.
Well, but it also could be a good way if you have friends who haven't played as much and you want to help them get up to speed, and you would be letting them play out, and you could be pointing out, well, you know, maybe if you did that instead, or I usually do this, and you could, you know, you could show people, you could use it as a teaching method easier than just like hovering over somebody's game in a, you know, watching them stream it and then going, oh, this and oh, that, because you'd have more of a real-time input, maybe.
Yeah, that's true. It gives both people something to do rather than just, like, standing over somebody's shoulder, either through screen share or directly to tell them how to play. That's a little, it's a little more obnoxious than actually working on it together in at least some capacity.
Yeah, you know, let me handle the scouting while you get accustomed to running the city type of a thing or something.
So yeah, some of these games have it in some capacity, but it would be hard to do in Civ, I think. More so than Civ already offers. With the exception of the things Canis mentioned, like bringing back alliances and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, just getting even back to permanent alliances and mutual victory type things.
Yeah, any kind of shared victory would be appreciated for that kind of setup. Because, man, even Dominions lets you do, like, Disciples. Which I guess is like teams in Civ 6.
Yeah, and it makes no sense that one person is whoever deals the... Like, if you were trying to do domination with the team, it's whoever gets the final blow that wins, not the fact that... But that might be the only time that they've conquered a Civ while the rest of you have been doing the heavy lifting, but they get credited with the win. It's like, excuse me?
Lots of fun.
You should win as a team. Otherwise, there's still a capital to be conquered for both sides.
I just found a new capital to conquer.
Duke Paratrop, go, go, go.
Whee, boom.
Oh, nope. I had a corporate exec in my capital.
Oh, no.
I hope you did, too.
Crap. I was saved by Sid Sushi.
Oh, Sid Sushi OP in many ways.
I'll just block paratroopers taking on the same turn they landed, whereas an empty city you could, and so far.
Oh, was it Sid Sushi that would be minus like 17 food if you had or minus 17 gold per city if you had a bunch of resources?
I think the corporations were all scaled cost-wise the same way on resource count. It's just that Sushi had the most food available. But you could bring that down so much with courthouses and such that...
You had raised the counteract, and then you had a bunch of free food because of Sid Sushi, so...
Well, yeah, and if you put, like, what is it? The thing you could make with six banks.
Wall Street?
Yeah, if you put your Wall Street in the corporate HQ, you're getting money in your corporate HQ based on the number of cities with Sid Sushi, so you can offset the costs between reducing it from spreading and then getting money from the HQ. You can either come out ahead or lose very little in practice, and then you get all that food.
Which means population, which means taxes, which, hey, more gold again.
Yeah, well, Civ didn't really have taxes per se, but yeah, you could run like merchants or whatever.
Commerce.
Yeah,
or work.
That's
work more
how
tiles.
I meant it, yeah.
As long as they're not working as citizens.
Yeah.
One hammer instead of whatever else they could get.
They're just wandering Specials around fixing
kind of
people's
anyway,
windows.
You're not going for great people points and not earning rep. They were always a bit questionable. Just as raw yield.
Hey, at least they were worth something, unlike in Civ 6.
Well, because they gave you the great people points in Civ 4. In Civ 6, that's not tethered to them any longer. That's the big difference. Back when they gave you great people points, and that made them also still very valuable in Civ 5.
Yeah. Probably my least favorite design choice in Civ.
Yeah, if they were going to do that, if they're going to take away the primary motivation for utilizing specialists at all, they should have given them some other reason to exist.
Well, they removed specialists almost entirely.
Yeah, well, yeah, I guess. I'd like to have seen them, though, but maybe they couldn't make it work properly.
Yeah, maybe it had balance. I don't know.
Yeah, or, like, how do you make it not redundant with the district system?
Yeah, because if you don't have a district, where is the person going to work?
Yeah.
I guess. I just don't like it.
I mean, they could have made them more important to getting the value out of the district than they have right now, maybe. But then you're all making a choice on whether to use them or not. Then you just want more specialists. So you're not really, like, adding depth in doing that. You're just, like, incentivizing growth a bit more. Which I guess is better than nothing, but it's not amazing. Yeah, maybe they just figured it wasn't worth trying to force that in with what they were doing with districts and city trade-offs. Whatever. It's okay. I think Civ 6's economy and empire management is not too bad overall, so I'm not going to complain that it doesn't need to have separatists be as important as they were.
I hope separatists aren't part of the game.
Right, specialists. Sorry. I was looking at the article and I saw the Paradox, and you know how I am with Rebels and Paradox games. Or how anybody experienced it with Rebels and Paradox games. Separatists are just the fact of living.
They're just a gnat.
Yep. And man, are there tons of them. My gosh.
And they're easy to get rid of compared to real gnats.
Yeah, debatable. Depends how much you're pushing yourself.
I mean, it's easier to hit them with the army stick than it is to put vinegar in a cup and wait for the gnats to eat.
I suppose.
What's the Paradox equivalent of putting vinegar in a cup?
2 gnats? How many cups?
No. Bad.
Okay, instead of co-op with your friends, who's your best AI friends?
Yes, indeed. Moving on, started on Reddit by Gimiku Pepero, I guess? Yeah, he has a tier maker list, because everything needs a tier maker list for how friendly the AIs usually are. And I guess this will, to some extent, be determined by playstyle, but I don't know. Most of these don't really surprise me, especially seeing Gilga Bro up at the top there.
Oh, yeah. That was the first thing I did. I was like, yep. It's always terrible. He was always such a great friend when you start out, and then at some point, if you have to betray him, it's like, oh, I don't want to. You've been so great.
Yeah. Man, he is Congo high. I love that.
Congo always hates me.
If you get a religion to them, then they're this kind of friendly. But if you don't, and they're on the other side of the map, they're like, well, where's my religion?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm not usually on good terms with Congo. I wouldn't put him that high for me personally. But yeah, I guess if you play for religion a lot. And how could you put such a friendly guy like Montezuma so low? It's just mean.
Well, I'm looking down there at Eternal Arch Nemesis and going, what did you do to make Curtin that mad? He's usually chill, at least.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's got to be something. Why is Canada so low, too? Usually they are just, they don't mind.
No, they're not necessarily the friendliest, but they're not, like, mean.
Yeah. Scotland can be mean. And I haven't played against Ambiorix yet, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. I find that when you start killing everyone, that the remaining leaders tend not to like you for some reason, so there's that.
Well, I wonder why.
It's weird.
It's that negative for holding the other person's capital. Yeah, that tends to not make people happy.
Such a penalty for, like, so many things.
I was merely protecting myself from the threat of other people winning the game.
I think we can pretty much assume that the person who made this list is not a big warmonger, because Alexander and Gorgo are both at the bottom.
Yes. You're not killing things. Kill more things. How about you? It's usually my response with those two. Man, Cyrus is down there as unfriendly, but he's usually at least up for some trade deals for me.
I would agree that Chandragupta belongs at the bottom because he's a dork.
I'm just remembering Ivy killed Dan. That was funny.
Why do you have city next to mine? Well, because I'm settling here. War!
You exist in the same universe as me, how dare?
I like you as neighbors, just not close neighbors.
I think he, like, took Dan's capital and then flipped Dan out of existence culture or something. It was weird.
I think that did happen, at least.
This was back before they nerfed Mounted, so I just killed him with knights later.
That was probably back in Rise and Fall days.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a couple of years now.
It's very, very gratifying to see Bolivar is not a horrible, angry person, because he's so powerful he'd be a pain otherwise.
But that's what makes leaders memorable. It would be more fun.
Why is Shaka not at the very bottom?
He doesn't seem, at least not to me, he doesn't seem quite like he did in some of the earlier civs.
Yeah, he's not outright hostile most of the times. He tends to feel neutral or a little bit angry, but he's not like mega angry like he used to be, I guess.
Yeah, you saw him in Civ 4 and he didn't have somebody he obviously hated more. Like, you were just getting ready to fight. It was such a pain.
He's learned caution in his older years, maybe? I don't know.
It's just less of an ass. It's still rare that he would win a game in Civ 4, but he could ruin yours easily. I found him worse than Montezuma, personally.
And Ragnar?
Yeah, Ragnar was not nice either, but I don't think he was quite as bad. With the, like, I'm gonna throw to attack you plays. He was up there too, though. Don't get me wrong, he just wasn't quite as much as Shaka.
Let's see. Ah, Victoria, right there next to Lautaro? Not Lautaro. The Canadian guy. Laurier.
Yeah. She just wants a trade agreement.
That's Elizabeth.
I know, but I usually find England to be friendlier than that, at least.
Struck me as particularly aggressive. But then, like, a lot of the... Like, my list would have most people in the middle.
I can see why somebody would be... Why Victoria would be problematic, because she doesn't like people who aren't on your continent.
Oh, yeah.
So, that would be definitely something that would make her a little bit more cranky. And I think everybody agrees that Brazil is absolute.
Pedro!
He's a chill guy. I like him.
You got a great person! Rawr!
Yeah, and when he complains that my great generals are too great, then I can show him that he is correct.
You get your first one, he's like, whoa, 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 my friend, great people are for Brazil, not for you. Leave the Wonder Building to us, thank you. Shut up, Pedro. I'll show you though. Well, it's not the six axe wonder anymore, but I don't know, the six sword wonder or something.
That'll get the job done, typically. Slap on a great general, bring a battering ram.
Yep. These cities? Oh no, those are perfectly traditional English names. Don't worry about that.
Yep, the English city of Recife.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And our glorious second capital of Rio de Janeiro.
I mean, you might as well just rename them to something offensive.
Oh, that's for multiplayer.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, the AI doesn't care. It's very important in multiplayer, though.
Oh, custom-named religions are always fun in Civ 5.
Yeah.
Vatican City wants dirty socks.
Are you sure it was socks?
That's a bit less childish than I've heard over the years.
That's a bit less childish than you'd hear sometimes on Saturday nights. Jeez.
That's what I'm saying.
That's why I picked that one and not some of the other ones.
Some of the other ones would be a little inappropriate for us to say on the show.
It's true. We'd love to tell you listeners, but you're just going to have to take our word for it.
I can use your imagination, I'm sure. You can figure it out. Some religion name. Good times.
Why do people have such a problem with Phoenicia?
Well, I don't think this is people in general. It's just this guy, right?
It's just this guy, because there's even somebody down here in the comments that's like, it's funny that this list is completely the opposite of how my civ leaders treat me, except for Gilgamesh.
Yeah.
The eternal bro.
It's just so easy to get him to like you and then keep him liking you, relative to, like, pretty much anybody else.
Yeah, and the OP was pointing out with Poundmaker, he's not an instant friend the way Gilgamesh is, but he's, once you get him started on that path, you can usually get him to stick to it and stay friends unless you do something ridiculously over the top wrong. Although somebody got denounced on site and in the game as America, they were like, that's fair, yeah, yeah, I could see why the Kree would denounce me as America on site.
It doesn't make sense. Why would they do that?
I don't think the Americans encountered the Kree, did they? I think the Kree were up in Canada.
Yes, but the implication is they heard about the Americans and what they do, and they're like, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah, Cleopatra is a pain. Where is she on this list?
Yeah, you just kill her armies, and then she's fine.
She will front stab and backstab you.
Why is she fairly friendly, unless this guy must build a lot of units and not go to war?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a bad idea to defend yourself, generally.
Yeah.
And depending on difficulty, it'll change how easy it is to have a bigger army than the AI as a standing army. Because the AI on high difficulty just spams too much bullcrap for that to be practical. I mean, you can kill it all and easily win the wars, but to just hold a sustained standing army is much less practical on the level the AI likes to do it.
On mid-levels, the AI doesn't seem to build units that much.
On high, like, it doesn't rebuild them on high, but they tend to have a lot initially. But it's just such not a big deal, because the AI is so bad. You'd be like, they have four times your power, and you just kill their units and start taking their cities anyway. It's a bit slower, because you have to kill units, but only so much. Try not to fall multiple arrows behind.
Yeah, usually a good plan.
But, like, if you've got a great general and you're fighting at parity, like, the AI is bad enough that you start killing units and getting promotions, and that just snowballs. It's pretty easy to win parity wars when you have farmed units. And they upgrade, so they keep being useful. Or you just get a tech lead. But that's like...
I like how both Genghis and Kublai Khan are friendly.
You must not have killed that guy's trading envoys.
Yeah, it's not usually a good idea to do that.
Not in general, and especially not with the Mongols.
They're here to trade. They're totally not here to spy on you.
Oh, I'm more making a reference to what the Iranians did to Genghis Khan, and how he answered that was one of the more brutal incidents in history.
Yes. Don't think anybody tried afterwards, after what happened to the Iranians. They're like, yeah, no, we like living.
I mean, it was a dick move in the first place. The retaliation was, like, way overboard. Because, like, most of the people who died had no involvement with that. But it was a dick move, to be fair.
Well, I think it's generally bad form to attack
envoys full stop.
Envoys, yeah. And, like, diplomatic people in general, you just don't attack, even in war.
Yeah. Yeah, that is broadly bad form.
And it always has been.
Yeah, because what's your endgame if you do that? You're basically just signaling going for total annihilation, I guess. Which, I guess that's what they got. Good job.
Annihilation. It's what's for dinner.
So I think we're done with this particular list. I think we agree mostly.
Yeah, I mean, I could put people a couple spots up or down. I don't really know. It just depends how the game goes. But I don't have any major objections. I just don't care enough. I think it's cool.
Okay, we will go on to this next topic, which is from Blake 0000. And he has made a video about Civilization 1 in HD, where he pulls the Civ Win stuff and the Civ DOS stuff and puts them together so that the audio isn't all screwed up in Civ Win and all the art looks good. So it's not the crappy version of Windows Civ. It's the good version of DOS Civ, but it's on Windows in HD. Hmm. And he talks about, he's made a video and he's doing a video series where he's going to go over all of the Civ games and Civ adjacent games over time. So he's got on his list Colonization, Master of Magic, Civ 2, Civ 2, Test of Time, Alpha Centauri, Call to Power 2, Civ 3, Civ 4, etc.
I like his his notations for how soon we can expect to see the future episodes, like coming very soon, or coming next year, coming next decade, coming next lifetime. Nice.
Sith Beyond Earth, coming next century. Sith 6, next lifetime.
I mean, it would be a little odd to tell people how to play Sith 6 right now.
It works just fine, but a few more versions of Windows from now, it might not work just fine.
Oh, that's true.
Civ 6 will be coming a little sooner than he thinks, probably. Let's just put it that way.
Well, yeah, if Windows is anything to go by with its track record.
Yeah.
A big part of the video is a Dune scenario on Civ 1. And he was pretty happy with that. But this is definitely something I believe you should look up, and if not, actually play the game. Maybe take a look at the video and see where we came from as a community.
Does Master of Magic count as Civ adjacent? I guess it's turn-based.
It's a turn-based game. Like, I don't know why Master of Magic is here, but...
Because everything else is, like, a lot more similar.
Like, why is Master of Magic... Why is Master of Magic here, but Master of Orion not? Because in the old days, the trilogy was... Or the Holy Trinity was Civ, Mom, and Mu, according to the venerable Mad Jin.
Mad Jin was wrong. Sorry, Mad Jin. Sorry, not sorry.
Master of Magic has a lot in similar Civ, that you go out and you explore things, and you have an end goal in mind, and it's on one singular planet, so to speak. I mean, even though it has the mirror side and the normal side, Master of Orion, is out in space, and you're managing multiple planets. I mean, they're kind of like cities on a map, and something feels different about Master of Orion, whereas Master of Magic does feel like it's more Civ adjacent.
I think I remember the thing about Master of Magic was you had two maps at the same time.
Yeah, you had portals, or these towers you flipped through back and forth between it.
But it was like the fantasy version of Civ.
Yes. Yeah, that's because it's fantasy Civ, and Master of Orion does an equivalent to space Civ. If it was space Civ, you'd be managing Mars or Alpha Centauri or something.
Well, Master of Orion had fixed points, too, as to where you could settle. There, like, with Civ, you're picking, like, there's good and bad spots, but you're still deciding what good and bad spots are, whereas in Master of Orion, like, there are certainly planets that are better than other planets, but you have to settle on a planet. You can't settle on not a planet.
You can't build a space station out in the middle of nowhere, as with even Master of Magic, you could build outposts in the middle of a desert if you wanted to.
Yeah, it's a bad idea, but you can.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm not saying that Magic is wrong and that those are bad games. Those are good games. I'm just saying he's leaving very important games out, like the Warlord series or Heroes of Might and Magic, which are also at least near this in time.
Well, they're not. Warlord
2 was straight up with Civ 2, I believe. Those were concurrent or close enough.
They're not turn-based 4X games, though.
They are. They're all turn-based, and they are certainly 4X. Even Hom is 4X, technically. But the Warlords, especially 2 and 3, but technically even 4, are very objectively 4X turn-based strategy games in every sense of the word. At least if you play with Fog of War.
Maybe we need a new term then, because they seem very different than like a Civ game.
Well, I think you're thinking of like the real-time Warlords that came out later. The 90s Warlords games were some of the finest turn-based strategies ever made, in my opinion.
Maybe it isn't Warlords I'm thinking of. Maybe it's something else.
Yeah. I mean, I have a YouTube series on Warlords, too. And I did briefly stream most of Warlords 3 campaign a couple years ago now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, because I watched that.
Yeah, that is certainly 4X. You're exploring, you're expanding, you're exploiting, you're exterminating. How is that not?
I think we need a new genre name, then. Something that's a little bit more specific for Civ-type games.
Well, Civ emphasizes the economy and empire builder side of it more so than, like, Ahom or Warlords. Because both of those also have, like, you're making decisions on what to build that really matter as the game progresses. But like that part of it is much less emphasized compared to the combat, which is like only barely emphasized in Civ games at all relative to how those games treat them.
Yeah.
So we would have turn-based 4X, not otherwise specified, and then economy focus and military focus.
I guess, but even that, like, where do you draw the line?
Because it also depends on the player playstyle, because you can play Civilization as a Go Smash game.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's how I tend to play Civ 6, because it's fun. But there's still, like, you still have to do more Empire management in Civ 6 than you have to do. Well, is that true?
I don't know. You do have to, you have to get a good foundation started and keep it going. You can hit a snowball part where you can micromanage it less, but you still have to do more of that than you do more of Smash.
Well, no, I'm just thinking, like, at the higher levels of Heroes of Might and Magic play, which I never got to, but I have a sense for it, because I've watched people who know what they're doing play in competitive multiplayer, and, you know, I got good enough that I could reliably win on the highest difficulties on the campaigns in HOM 3 eventually. So it's not like I suck, I'm just not good like people who actually play against each other. And, like, you know, I'm thinking about that, and I don't want to easily say that economy management isn't, like, freaking crucial, actually. You can easily lose the game on your choices, and most people don't make the correct choices when it comes to the economy side of it. So I would hesitate to say that that's not emphasized pretty significantly, even though most of it is on the combat, or at least most of the interesting things that you think about and see happen. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know that they're as far apart as being advertised. Because you can also really choke, even with, like, stat combat and so far, like Firefox did when he's fighting me in that one Ish game. Like, I mean, we were pretty similar tech, and he lost, like, 10-1 odds, because he got collateral initiative.
Oh, man, collateral damage on stacks. Yikes, I forgot about that.
Yeah, but, like, he also wasn't defending one of his coastal cities very well. And I noticed that. So, like, I specifically took Guerrilla 2 promotion so I could move through hills quickly. So, like, I captured a city that was guarded by a warrior, like, unloaded the a bunch of crossbows with Guerrilla 2. It was, like, moving 2-speed through his interior cities with Guerrilla 2 crossbows. And he just didn't have, like, he wasn't in slavery, which is a huge blunder if he's going to fight a war. And he just couldn't produce units before I started taking way too many cities for it to matter. So, like, even though Civ 4 is not really a combat-emphasized game, there are still plenty of potential failure points or things you might not expect, especially when you're playing against other humans, where you can still get absolutely screwed, even if your economy management is pretty good on the war side of things.
Yeah, because that's an unusual promotion on a crossbow.
You wouldn't think about it in normal games, because in normal games, the AI inefficiently just throws bunches of units everywhere. And so, like, that kind of stuff doesn't work, and because of its bonuses, it's not really a threat to the AI on high difficulties. So it's just not something you'd think about normally. But in PvP, where your every resource is a constraint more so, you have to think about that kind of stuff a bit more. And anyway, I just got caught out. Collateral initiative is huge in PvP as well. Like, if you're at parity, it's very dangerous to have somebody be able to move more squares than you and pick when they just dump a whole bunch of collateral. That sucks.
So anyway, old Civ games, they should be good. Keep an eye on this series. We think there'll be lots of good stuff in it later. And there's already good stuff now.
Yeah, and some of these is like, yeah, I would love to know how to run this best on Windows 10. I'd like to, you know, even if it's just for over a weekend, I would love to go back and replay some of these. So I'm glad to see this series is going to be coming.
Yeah.
I'd like to go back and play half of them for the first time. I'm a young punk.
You whippersnapper.
Whippersnapper.
That was your age.
Oh, I had to use DSL.
I can actually say when I was your age to, like, my nephews. I try not to.
Because once you get started doing that, you start doing it all the time, and then you really sound like a cranky old person.
I've been a cranky old person since I was 12.
Were you going around telling 6-year-olds when I was your age?
Actually, yes, I was.
Your age.
Yeah.
I told my brother that many times. When I was your age, we didn't have the internet. We had dial-up. Oh, that was not fun.
That was technically the internet.
That was the internet. It was a very, very, very early internet, but it was.
Hey, I played StarCraft on dial-up, and their netcode was pretty good, because you could actually play games on dial-up.
Yeah, like that was one of the reasons it took off so well, is because you could actually play it, and, like, other things were, like, so slow.
Yeah. Well, also, Battle.net made it a lot more accessible than it was previously.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a pain getting multiplayer to work in a lot of cases, especially since, like, there are back relative to now, where a lot of people who play games are adults because we played them as kids. That was much less true back then. You had adults who like picked up games for the first time, but the number was so much smaller as a percentage. So, like, in addition to them being more complex, there's less people who knew what they were doing to get these games together. Completely different world.
There was a group of people I was talking with once, very recently, and they were asking, why is play by email a thing? Like, you guys are really young. You don't understand how the world used to be.
But also, there are countries who do not have the internet infrastructure that a lot of the air quote first world countries, developed countries do. And play by email is still good because your internet is not reliable access. So,
yeah. Some people in the first world don't have reliable internet.
Yeah.
So.
There's places
really
in the U.S.
where you live. Because one of my friends was like out in the sticks in the U.S. and it was satellite internet or nothing, right?
Oh, God,
so,
yes.
Actually, I knew multiple people who had satellite internet or nothing for a while.
My parents
are
on
satellite. Just browsing and stuff like that, but if you want to play games, oh no, the ping is, the lag is horrifying.
Yeah, the latency is just way too much.
Satellite internet is
pretty good.
Satellite internet is really bad because it has limited bandwidth. Like, you get 50 gigs a month.
Yeah, there's that too. And there's all kinds of problems with it.
But it's also the only thing my parents had for a very long time. And they're finally laying fiber optic cord out there now, so...
Man, I want fiber. Cable's okay. Like, I shouldn't complain as long as I have, like, a functional cable, but... And fiber's so much better. But yeah, I really like the microwave tech for people who can't get things wired to them easily. Because that's so much better than satellite. You get pings that are playable in online, and it's not perfectly reliable, but it's pretty good. It's a lot more reliable than any alternative you have if you can't get cable or fiber.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can't wire the whole planet.
Yeah, like you can get like somewhere between 60 or 80 milliseconds ping with microwave. That's not bad at all.
It's actually really good.
Yeah.
Maybe not for FPS, but...
That's playable on FPS. Because like some people have better ping than that, but you know they're not going to be... they're not going to have more than 100 milliseconds ping on you, and most people have... More ping than that. Most people have like somewhere between 30 and 80, even on cable. So your competitive disadvantage, if you're like in the 60 to 100 range, is pretty minimal. Especially because some games compensate for it or whatever other crap goes on with the server side stuff.
Mm.
Yeah, it's not a big deal. If you're running like 60 to 80, you're fine. Unless we're talking like the true top end play. But like people do those events live or on LAN or whatever. They don't. Like, if you're talking about professional-level play in something like League of Legends or something, then sure.
Yeah.
For the kind of play that most people are going to do, it's fine.
Oh, yeah. It would be almost imperceptible to anybody who's, like, casual or even, like, pretty serious but still not pro.
Try hard but not pro.
Yeah.
All right, I think we're ready for the outro.
All right, but I don't hear the music.
Well,
so get out.
Oh no.
We're
no magic.
We're channeling Imagine statements about the 1990s games. Well, anyway, this has been episode 391. Still correcting Imagine that there were other games beyond his alleged trinity, but those are also quite good games. Anyway, this is the main team, and I was joined by Candace Alvinus.
One of these days, I'll remember not to fall in the shower.
Oh, dear.
And Makalua.
There were also RPG games in the 90s he's totally ignoring, so yeah.
We don't talk about those, though.
Hey.
I think there was this thing called Ultima for a while.
Yeah, from the 80s, actually.
Baldur's Gate, etc.
Baldur's Gate, yeah.
Or Final Fantasy.
Open the show,
get out!
I didn't play Baldur's Gate until, like, a couple of years ago. So that was an experience, for sure.
You must gather your party before venturing forth.
Yes, yes indeed. Kicked him in the head till he was dead. Great.
Civilization 3, 4, 5, Beyond Earth, Sound Clips, Copyright, Take-Two Interactive. Copyright the Polycast at thepolycast.net.